Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
Hey, did you know I got a tattoo?
No.
Yeah, it's a cloaked Klingon bird of prey.
Already. It's a new year already.
New year. Now let's just put it on the table here. It's been like, 3 weeks? It's just been weird. Because it's always the end of year thing. You got to have your Festivus. And then it's just weird the way things work.
I went to a wonderful Festivus party. The first actual party I've been to in almost 3 years. Because it's my friend Tommy. He does his own podcast, Frankenstein Minute. He and his lovely bride are grandparents now, so they're very meticulous about making sure that everybody around them has been vaccinated. So, it was a small gathering, only about 8 or 10 people on Festivus night, but it was a lot of fun. And it's funny how parties like that kind of break down, because you don't ever, all the men stay here, all the women go here. But that's kind of what happened. And we ended up down in his basement where he set up all his DVDs and Blu-rays and books and everything. Really, he is to Blu-rays what I am to omnibuses. Except his are organized. And we ended up down there just, talking about the nerdiest stuff. He's doing that Frankenstein Minute. The premise of it is they go through the Frankenstein movies. They're up to Son of Frankenstein minute by minute. Okay, here's the minute of Frankenstein. We're going to talk about who's in it, how it was filmed, go off on tangents, et cetera, et cetera. So, of course, we're talking Frankenstein. You know what the big argument was, Joe? What color is Frankenstein's monster?
I thought he was green.
That's the thing. In the book, and when they did the original makeup, he was gray. It was later on that they did green, and now all the marketing from Universal is that he's green. Mm. I, of course, hold the Trump card.
Uh-oh.
In the Marvel Universe, where he was drawn by Mike Ploog, he was gray. So, therefore, he's gray.
Well, on my Festivus...
Mike Ploog is always right.
I just went to work.
Matter of fact,
no, don't be, because I canceled a lot of my leave over Christmas. First of all, because, as you probably saw the headlines, TSA is extremely shorthanded. It's not all our fault, because the airlines insist on putting all their flights in the same bank. So it's like if you're leaving at 3 o'clock, that means it's going to get real busy around 1 o'clock. So your best bet is to probably get there at like noon and try to get there between the banks where it doesn't get all busy. But on the other hand, I'm also saving up the vacation for the upcoming Hawaiian trip, which we're going to be doing in March.
Now, when you're in Hawaii, you're going to get a tiki god?
I don't know. I'm not really big on those.
Because,
last time I was there.
When Bobby Brady did it, bad things happened.
See, the last time, the last tiki god I saw was one where they blow Kleenex tissues out his nose, and had it not been like $30 and extremely heavy, I probably would have bought it and brought it home. But this time around, maybe. Now, what did you do for Christmas?
Christmas, I actually had the day off, and they had 2 football games, so I really just kind of spent the day reading comics, and then I made myself some homemade nachos. Yeah, I really had the tortillas, and I cut them into chips, and I deep fried them, and then I put them in the oven with everything that I wanted, and it was beer and nachos on Christmas, which I thought was fantastic.
You're a beer drinker?
It was all homemade.
I never thought you was a beer drinker.
I'm not a big beer drinker, but hey, a couple of Guinnesses on Christmas, that's
sure.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I was home. I kept my day off for that day. I actually did a little geeking the Thursday before, which I'll talk about as the episode goes on. But New Year's, we went over to my brother-in-law's, which was kind of cool. And I think I mentioned my father-in-law, he was having problems. He's doing much better now. He's mobile. He's home. Everything. I mean, he's still, you know, he's 90 plus years old, you know, but he's still doing pretty good. Christmas Day, Holly was in San Diego. Dana was in Reno. Holly went down with her boyfriend to visit the boyfriend's grandfather, who isn't doing well. And they drove the entire way, picked up his sister in Bozeman, the boyfriend's sister, stopped and visited Dana, and then kept going. So basically, when they saw Dana, they gave her the baggie of presents. We're not really big on presents. We're getting older. I don't know if you've run across this phenomenon, Corey. Instead of giving big presents to your critter, you know, you kind of help them throughout the year. Oh, they need some tires. Okay, well, we'll help you buy a set of $800, you know, tires. So we never really have big Christmas presents. It's always like little knickknacks and things like that. And as I can, oh, of course, now my computer's freeze up. I think I should get myself a new computer. But I picked up a couple books. One book for my daughter was called The Fly. And I talked about this before. And if you wonder why there's a quick pause, because instead of using the computer where I had everything all lined up and ready to talk about, I actually did prep work for this year podcast. I'm just going through my original notes here on my phone. Got to get through all the pictures. That's one of the things I'll talk about. Here it is, The Fly. I talked about this at one of our previews episode by Lewis Trondheim. And it's just a amazing little hardcover book with basically spans the life of a fly. He originally set this up as a strip for a Japanese television show. And what had happened was the Japanese decided they didn't want a fly with face and a mouth on it. They just wanted the fly itself. So he did this for a number of years. Matter of fact, if you go online, I think under the series called Fly Tales, you can find these little 5-minute episodes. Eventually, he decided he didn't want to do this for the Japanese, and so he just made the graphic novel for Paper Cuts, I think, is the ones who published it. But it's delightful. I definitely should go out and find it. The other one I gave away that was a big hit was It Ate Billy on Christmas from Roman Dirge, I believe. Let me look this sucker up. It Ate Billy on Christmas. My brother-in-law's name, of course, is Billy. And he absolutely loves it. Let's see. Ate Billy on Christmas. Roman Dirge, yep. And he's a guy from Lenore. Very dark humor, published by Dark Horse. Should be available now. Not tremendously expensive. Might be able to find a used copy here or there. So I gave graphic novels for Christmas, like I'm always wont to do. And then later that night, we went over to my folks' house. So we kind of had a Zoom-type Christmas with the girls. They opened up their little gifts. And that was kind of our Christmas. Now, how about New Year's? Because as we're recording this, the day, New Year's Day, because we want to be timely this year. Can you imagine all those lists of people that passed away in 2021 and got to go revise themselves because Betty White didn't quite make it to 100?
Yeah.
That's now, why I never liked those lists before the end of the year. It's like, dudes, we got like 3-4 days left.
Well, I know on TCM, they actually are very good about if someone passes away, they insert them into their annual retrospective. I don't know about other people who do, but TCM's always been great about that. For New Year's Eve, I actually worked. So
we kind of switched around.
Yep, I was at the group home last night. However, I'm at the home where it's two people in wheelchairs who doze a lot, and the resident I call my buddy, the guy who's in his mid-20s, autistic, nonverbal, really active, really likes me to the point where if he hears my voice, if I come in and he's laying down and he hears my voice, he's out of bed, out and at my side immediately. Well, last night I got there and he was in the middle of supper. So I sat down with him and finished feeding him because he can pick up stuff and put it in his mouth, but using forks and stuff, he doesn't have the, where you can manipulate your fingers and hands with a lot of dexterity. He's just not able to do that. So if it's soup or anything sort of soft, like, you know, pudding or applesauce, et cetera, we have to hand feed him. So I finished that, and his parents showed up, and they took him for New Year's Eve, which was very nice. I was very happy that he got to go home for New Year's Eve. The other two clients were already pretty much dozing off by 7. So I got him their meds, got him into bed. They were all done by 8 o'clock. And do you know what was on Comet TV last night, Joe?
Duck soup.
No.
No? Oh, wait a minute.
Comet TV is a sci-fi over-the-air channel that does a lot of sci-fi movies and TV shows. They're getting Farscape. So every ad is about Farscape. But they had a Godzilla marathon that they are rerunning today.
Oh.
So Godzilla movies. I did have to watch AEW Rampage, which I covered for PWInsiderElite.com. I'm going to go ahead and give my my freaking about that. They had a street fight, blowing off the feud with Ty Conti and Anna Jay versus Penelope Ford and the Bunny. There was so much blood. I'm sorry. We don't need that much blood on our TV. You can have a street fight. It can be brutal. They've had street fights in AEW before where it's just kind of like the old WWF, WWE hardcore matches. But everybody bled. Three of the four had so much blood on their face. You could, you know, the old crimson mask. There was one spot where they had put thumbtacks on the mat. And one of the wrestlers slipped and did the splits onto the thumbtacks. We don't need blood in our wrestling matches anymore. I get once in a while, but with so many bloodborne pathogens, with so many problems of disease, we don't need blood in wrestling anymore. We don't. And while the match was good and it elevated everybody, at the end of it, it was just, why did all four of them feel they needed to take a razor blade and slice open their forehead to make us care more about the match? I don't like blood in my wrestling. It's not needed anymore. It's not 1996.
Then so what'd you get for Christmas? Oh, you're still on New Year's. You had a busy New Year's.
Yeah. Then when I got home, I did the recording for PW Insider, sat and watched Duck Soup. Then watched Godzilla movies till I was too tired to stay up anymore.
Yeah, New Year's, we got together with some friends. We played games, just, you know, mellow old folk stuff. And just so you know, it's true. If you start Star Wars at exactly 10:02:43, that's 10 p.m., 2 minutes after 43 seconds, the Death Star will explode at midnight. Now, we were 20 seconds off because the person who did it panicked and started a little early. We were even worried a little bit because, you know, it's not like we did it with a DVD. We were doing it through streaming service. And we were doing the extended edition, you know, where they added those extra 2 minutes with Han and Jabba the Hutt.
Ugh.
But it's okay. I liked it. Why they never re-add the part with
Wedge?
Yeah, I always confuse Wedge and the other guy who survived, because that actually would make sense. That would add some stuff that actually makes sense. Oh, we're never going to get out of here. Or is it Biggs? Is the one who survived. Biggs is his friend.
Oh, okay.
Remember in the original comic book that we're talking, where he drags him out to see there was a fight and there isn't, and he confesses, I'm going to go to join the rebellion. And there's also a brief moment when he dies in the Death Star and you see Luke kind of turn around and have a brief moment of sorrow, which doesn't mean anything unless you realize it's his childhood friend. But the Death Star will explode at midnight. It was actually kind of funny because we were like maybe 20 minutes in from the end of the movie, and one of the people who were with us was really like, oh my God, it's not going to happen. We're off by minutes. I said, no, this is the first run. Relax. No, but they're going down the trench. Okay. The Y-wings go first. They get destroyed. Then the second wing. Then Vader destroys them. The third one will be Wedge, Biggs, and Luke. So we're only on the first one, and I couldn't get that through her head. But no, it was funny because it actually did. If we'd have synced it a little better, if she wouldn't have started it so quick. So next year, I mean, we were barely watching it. I mean, I think we got a lot of mileage out of the, hey, dude, you're macking on your sister shit. But other than that, so we did that for you guys, so you don't have to.
By the way, if you start watching the Raw from February 8th of 2021 at 10:15, Nia Jax will ring in the new year by screaming, my hole, exactly at midnight.
Which see, we're doing all this stuff. So the quick question I asked, did you get anything interesting for Christmas?
My parents sent me a box. Now,
Are these your chips?
For years, they send me a gift card.
Oh, I always thought they sent you the box of potato chips you love.
That is coming later because Mom is behind on everything. But they did send me this big box of like fruit and snacks and stuff. And it's the first time they've done that. And I don't think I've ever had apples this good. They may be the best apples I've ever had. Comic-wise, however, I got myself some gifts. Because cheap graphic novels had their Black Friday sale. And most of that stuff didn't show up till like a day or two before Christmas. So it was, yay, I got me presents. Now, did you do any geeking in the last few weeks?
Well, I will say for my Christmas gift, my wife listened to me. She got me Dave Grohl's The Storyteller, Tales of Life.
Oh, I thought the present was just that she listened to you.
No, I mean, for me, the hard part was that this book was tough to get because when it came out, it was really heavily promoted at Target. I mean, I was listening to it. Target's got those big screens where he's up there talking about it. And buy my book. And so I called one of the associates. I just was told by a gigantic David Grohl to buy his book. And she's like, oh, we're sold out. It just flew off the shelf. So I have it. I imagine I'll review it. I did do some geeking. In fact, let me call up my geek list. I'm going out to get some last-minute Christmas gifts. A lot of them ended up being like gift cards and things like that. You know, like for my brother, he's out of work, that type of thing. So I got him Aldi gift cards because it's the only store in town. But I did hit a few shops. One of them that I discovered is called the Man Cave Dealer. If you go to www.mancavedealer.net, he's 1452 85th Avenue Northeast in Spring Lake Park. I discovered him via Facebook. Really nice guy. He's just like, hey, how'd you find out about me? I said, I was just flipping through Facebook and I ran into you. I've been trying to get out to his store. This particular day, I decided this is the day I was going to go visit. And he's got this really neat location and it's basically just a man cave. One room is filled with Viking stuff. From anything from t-shirts to banners to those autograph plaque poster things. Another one's got Green Bay. Another one's got Budweiser stuff. Another one's got, I bought a couple Matchbox cars from him, some BP, the little tanker truck and the one Explorer vehicle because it had the little cover with it. A lot of times they don't have all the accessories with them. Just a fun store. He's always talking that stuff comes in and disappears really fast. This is kind of what I'm aiming at, I think. When I finally retire, should I call up the countdown? Dun, dun, dun. So this is as of January 1st, 2022. And I have 3 years, 1 month, 4 days, 11 hours, 4 minutes, and 15 seconds as of now. And then this is the type of store I think I want to open. Just have fun with it. You know, I've got tons of stuff. And I'll talk about it when I get to eBaying, because I've been doing a lot of eBaying. But I'll never get through everything. I mean, yeah, that would be kind of my retirement thing. But it would be fun just to have a fun shop set up where people can just come in, and maybe I'll do a little commission, things like that. But anyways, Man Cave Dealer was a lot of fun. Check it out. Went out to my old friend Tim out at Remax out in Forest Lake, and we talked quite a bit. And he was even like, you know, I got in a ton of comics. He put a whole huge Hulk collection down in the dollar bins. And one guy came in and picked it up and said, yep, I'll take it. And he always thinks of me, which I appreciate. But I'm like, you know, I don't know what I'm going to buy when I go to his shop. Because it's I'm trying to find my pile of stuff that I bought from him. And I think, oh, no, I don't know where it went. It wasn't something I was going to talk about. But, oh, wait, here it is. Let's see. I got a Battlestar Galactica number one, which must be a Whitman variant because it's got like a triangle square. It's 35 cents and no UPC code. So maybe it just came along with one of those three packs. I picked up a book called Bats, Cats, and Cadillacs. No idea what it's about. Picked up a Marvel Super Action starring Captain America. The Power Man and Iron Fist 73 that's got the ROM appearance in it. And let's see, there's some other graphic novels. They're out and about somewhere. Like I said, I'm slowly trying to get everything organized. I can't even say that with a straight face. I hit up the Comic College on one of my geeking trips. I think I texted you. I picked up the second Deadly Hands of Kung Fu omnibus, which I did not buy the first time around. Picked up a number of the $3 books. And just some fun stuff to read. It's always fun to kind of dig through the store. Matter of fact, Corey, if today wasn't the first, and we know 90% of the stores, if not all of them, that we geek at would probably be closed today, it would have been a perfect day to go geeking because it's cold. Nobody wants to go outside. I've got money. And more importantly, my boss gave me the day off work because she's kind of grateful that I canceled. Well, not only Thanksgiving vacation, but Christmas vacation. And so I texted her on Wednesday. I left her an email when I left on Thursday and asked, hey, could I have Saturday off? Because they got like seven people. The flights are busy and then nothing in the afternoon. And she texted me Friday. Oh, sorry. I just got the email. I'm like, oh, cool. So I got the day off, which is good because I slept in. So that was my Christmas. That was my New Year's. Those were my books I gave away. I always give graphic novels. I love doing that.
I actually gave my son a couple of Alton Brown books.
Oh.
Because he's a huge Alton Brown fan. Alton Brown finished another run of Good Eats. That show is over now, which is sad. But it sounds like Alton Brown is no longer with Food Network either.
Hmm.
Because when he did the last episode of Good Eats, he talked about how this is the closing of a chapter in his life with the Food Network. He doesn't have any shows with them now. He's not hosting anything with them anymore. He's out on tour currently. So I got my son Alton Brown's book, Everyday Eats, which is kind of the stuff that he makes for himself all the time. And then The Last Good Eats, which is the book that has all the recipes and stuff from Good Eats. Son is a huge Alton Brown fan. Have I told you how Alton Brown made my son sad one time?
No.
So one of the things that Alton Brown says is no unitaskers in the kitchen other than your fire extinguisher. And a unitasker is a thing that's good for only one thing. Like you see them all the time now where it's use this to make eggs in your microwave. What else does it do? Nothing. Does nothing else. Like a waffle maker, you could say, oh, it only makes waffles, but no, it also makes sandwiches and hash browns. And if you want really good crispy stuff, use your waffle maker because it gets hotter than just about anything else. But my son, when he was a teenager, was a devotee of Alton Brown. And there was one time where I was, you know, at the group home for quite a long time. And when I came home, he was so proud. He'd thrown away all the Unitaskers, all of them. I, of course, was a little upset that he'd done this without at least asking me. And one of the, I like little weird things. And one of the little weird things that I bought at a yard sale back when I was married, and he still used from time to time, in the 80s, there was this little tiny steamer. And it was basically this small thing. You'd pour water in it, and there was a metal divot. You'd put a hot dog on, and you'd put the top on it, and you'd put the bun on top, and it would steam your hot dog and the bun. Just individually steam them. Joe, is that a Unitasker?
All I know is I'm getting really hungry right now, and I have a Hostess cream-filled cupcake sitting here for after the podcast, and I may be eating it now.
It's a Unitasker.
Yeah.
The way. A few weeks later, he's like, hey, Dad, we had this thing that would steam hot dogs and buns. What happened to it? And I said, I don't know. Was it a Unitasker? And he got this look on his face, and he went, I threw it away, didn't I? I said, you probably did. And he was sad for the rest of the day, because it's one of those things where it's, I am looking forward to having myself a steamed hot dog. And he had to settle for a grilled cheese sandwich. Now, me, I preferred the grilled cheese sandwich. But it was funny how, yes, what you did has come back to bite you. This is a lesson that you need to learn.
Yes. There's no reason you needed to throw it out just because some idiot said so.
I agree with some of it. I don't buy Unitaskers. But there are times when I have some kitchen stuff or other things, like a comic box. Yes, you can use it for other things, but you're really only going to use it for comics. Yeah.
No, you know, I'm kind of like, if you like your steam buns and that's the only thing it does, don't be an idiot. Keep it.
Yeah. Although I've
it
learned
brings
I don't
you joy. Keep it.
That's why the whole Marie Kondo thing. If it doesn't bring you joy, get rid of it. Well, there are a lot of things.
A memory attached to it. A good memory.
There are a lot of things in my house that don't bring me joy that I damn well better have, like hammers, tools. A duct tape, cleaning supplies.
Toilet paper.
Yeah, but there are other things.
Utilitarian stuff.
You know, the comics. The comics bring me joy. Whether I have them or, you know, after I read them, why do I keep them? Well, they bring me joy.
Yep. And I like selling them, so they bring me joy as well.
Yeah. See, you're more of a seller, and I'm more of a, I'm not even going to call
me
myself
if I don't want it. If I don't want it. Or yeah. If I know it's something that I can flip.
Or it's something that you've read and you're not going to read again.
Which sometimes may come back to bite me, because there's been times recently where I've read something that I've already read and I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Maybe. But then again, there's also, you know, I got Marvel Unlimited, which I've got to, unfortunately, it's attached to an email I no longer use. So I've got to figure out how to take care of that. Speaking of movies, I was trying to figure a clever way to say that. We both saw the Spider-Man movie.
Yes, we did. And there will be spoilers abounding.
Do you want to talk about it, or should we save it for another podcast?
No, let's do it now.
Okay, let's give ourselves a 10-minute limit to talk Spider-Man.
I will put in the episode description that we will be talking Spider-Man spoilers.
And don't we have a spoiler noise still?
Yes, we do.
Now, you're listening now. It's your own fault.
I actually went to a movie theater to watch this.
I did too. We don't want a Kim Kardashian anything here, okay? We don't want to be the spoiler, but we did give the warning. And yeah, my wife actually got us tickets for the Thursday before Christmas to go see it. And we went to the Ultra screen at Marcus. There were people around us, but you know, we wore our masks and we ate accordingly and all that fun stuff. instant reaction. That was fun.
That was a roller coaster of emotion. It really was a roller coaster of emotion.
Too much. Because as you know, everybody's like, oh my God, this is the best movie since Endgame. I went out of Endgame like crawling on my hands and knees. It was so amazing. This, as I sat and I thought about it, and I went and I read the Easter eggs. Like, did you catch a little crawl across the bottom of one of the news screens? Political turmoil continues in New Asgard.
Yes.
No, I didn't catch that the first time. And of course, there's all the other little ones, like one of the license plates was reference to the first appearance of a Dr. Octopus. I was just geeking to see the actor playing Dr. Octopus.
And so many, anytime there was graffiti.
Ditko. Oh, yeah, I did catch the Ditko. I did see that.
It was a lot of times, twice, sometimes I
nudge my wife, and she's like, yes, I caught the Ditko. And I'm like, whoa, that's some key points for you. The theater cheered when Tobey Maguire appeared.
Oh, yeah.
I clapped. I mean, I was like, that was, and this is one of those things where, as I thought about the movie, and it's, you know, what a brilliant way to do it. To have Andy come forward, and then just have Toby appear without the costume on. Absolutely brilliant.
For me, there was all this stuff that happened, but the one thing that really kind of warmed my heart the most, and I needed this. I didn't know I needed it until I saw it. MJ falls from the top of the scaffolding. Andrew Garfield, who was the one who did the Gary Conway death of Gwen, where he's webbing caught her and her neck snapped and she hit her head and died. He saw her fall. He went to shoot the webbing, stopped and jumped and caught her. And the emotion that brought me was, I was not expecting that, because Amazing Spider-Man 2 was good in points, but I always felt that last half hour with the Green Goblin and Gwen's death felt very much we need to add this because, God, we got to shove everything in this. But giving him that moment to sort of redeem himself. Because the thing that I liked best was around that was when they're talking about what happened, and he said, you know, someone I cared about a lot died, and I got really dark after that.
Now, I
got his redemption in him saving Mary Jane for the MCU Peter Parker.
I love
that so much.
I never saw those movies. I probably won't. I might see the first one.
They're good.
I did see the scene where Gwen died, because as I went and watched the videos and read the articles about the YouTube, they actually showed it. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch the second one, because they never give him his they gave him his redemption moment now. But all those years where they never did a third one, what a crappy way to end his reign as Spider-Man. And there's even moments like when they're telling him, you know, no, you are amazing. Because his Spider-Man's always down on himself. And I think Tobey Maguire gave him that pep talk and said, you're amazing. Yeah. I caught all that. But I don't know if I could watch that movie knowing what's coming, that they never really went into the Sinister Six like they might have had they done a third one. I'll probably watch it eventually. But I don't feel a need to, because like you said, he's been redeemed. He got redemption.
Now, have before you heard the I rumor saw this, coming out of this, though?
What was that?
Have you heard the rumor coming out of this, though?
I've seen a lot of rumors. Which one are you talking on?
Sony is chasing Emma Stone to do a Spider-Gwen movie.
Now, that would be sweet.
Emma Stone, who played Gwen Stacy in the Amazing Spider-Man movies. So, I'm excited about that. I hope she says yes.
Yes. Oh, that would be so fun. I might just watch that just to see her play Gwen Stacy again. Because like I said, I didn't watch any of the Andy movies. I was kind of spidered out after the third Toby. But this was great. I'm so hipped on the multiverse concept. I watched Loki. Turbo, my buddy Turbo, told me to just jump to the end of What If, so I understood what was going on there.
And, I liked What If. I finally finished
What If was
it.
Fun.
What now, a fun
gotta
series.
Say, I was a little I love the after credit scene with Tom Hardy. I believe that's right, the Venom.
Yes.
Which I thought was cool because I watched the end. I haven't seen the Venom movies. I did watch the end because someone said, oh, yeah, there's a big reveal at the end of the movie. And I like, oh, he's sitting in his thing and the Venom recognizes Spider-Man. So that was fun. Now, I had seen the Doctor Strange trailer because it had dropped before I saw it in the theater. So I was a little disappointed with Marvel in that really that's the only thing you got as an after credit scene is to show us the Doctor Strange trailer. Again, had I seen it maybe the first week, I'd be like, oh my God, this is incredible. You got to see it. Now I'm like, well, it was fun to see on the big screen. And then I also, as I'm watching things in the various spoiler movies, they kind of spoiled WandaVision for me because, you know, and again, it's my own fault. WandaVision's been out for the better part of a year, and I just slowly am trying to catch up on everything. But all in all, Spider-Man was I got to see it again. It's definitely gone up. Like I said, it's just a fun ride. I wasn't quite sure what to think about it. I didn't walk out like Endgame where I thought it was the best thing ever. But definitely, they did an outstanding job. Marvel, you did what Endgame was it. I kind of went, okay, I'm pretty much done with Marvel. I never watched Spider-Man, No Way Home. Didn't watch Shang-Chi, did not watch Eternals, caught Black Widow on TV. But now I'm hyped again. And what's amazing, you have not even done anything with Fantastic Four. You have not done anything with X-Men. And I'm dying to see where you go. So I am just excited. I am back on board.
What I liked a lot about the ending was when they were making the movie, Marvel only had kind of a three-picture Spider-Man deal. And this was the end of their deal. So they set it up in case Sony said, all right, we're done. You can't have Spider-Man anymore. In a way that really kind of closed out the character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, they have announced that they've come to a deal for more Spider-Man appearances because the movie made $1 billion. Sony's not going to go, well, we don't want any of that money. When no one has made $1 billion since the pandemic started.
And I'm curious, too, you know, because they made the thing about, you know, Nick Fury is still in outer space. Again, I didn't see No Way Home, so I didn't realize it was a Skrull. I'm kind of curious now when Nick Fury comes back, because people are asking me, well, how does this work? I said, well, they remember Spider-Man fighting in Endgame. They remember there being a Spider-Man. Nobody remembers who he is.
Yeah.
So it's not that hard to think of. Imagine Nick Fury is going to come back and be pissed as hell. Like, how can we not know who this guy is? I'm also curious because that means they reset the Vulture. He doesn't know who Spider-Man is, which is interesting because did you get the Mobius trailer?
Yes.
Oh, that looked fun. Even my wife was like, I would go see that. Because that to me is kind of the all I need to know if a movie is going to be hot or not is have my wife watch the trailer. And if she says she wants to see it, Batman, she was like, eh, I don't know if I want to see that. And I will probably see Batman. If I could get my Tuesdays off again, I would go to $5 movie nights again. So we got both those trailers. Now, is there any other movies you watched in the short span where we haven't been talking?
Not in the theater. At home, I've kind of been on the Criterion Channel. They have Japanese noir,
ooh,
which I know nothing about. So I've started watching those. And let me tell you something. Japanese crime films, especially in the 50s, much darker and bloodier and more violent than U.S. 50s movies. Because I'm used to, you know, Hollywood noir, which they were dark toned and had the deep shadows. And the story was basically someone makes a mistake and then continues to compound on that mistake. That's the essence of a noir story. Think Double Indemnity or The Postman Only Rings Twice or a DOA. You know, pick up on South Street, movies like that. But in Japan, when they moved into that, they didn't have the Hays Code. So they could have a lot more violence. And the samurai films were really big at the time. And samurai films didn't have that moral ambiguity. So when they did their crime movies, they could lean heavy into having unlikable characters doing bad things, which they could kind of skirt the edge in the U.S. There are so many noir movies that I watched that were made in the U.S. where you could tell that, okay, this is our real ending, but with the Hays Code, we have to show that the bad guy gets punished. So there's always like that 3 to 4 minute coda at the end where, and then the cops show up and arrest him instead of he got away with it. But really, it's been more TV sort of stuff. I watched What If. I'm watching Squid Game.
How is that? I've been hearing a lot of things about that.
It's really good, but do not be in a bad mood when you watch it because it is dark. Mm. You know the premise of it, right?
Not particularly.
The premise is that if you are in debt, someone will come up to you and say, hey, we could get you out of this debt. We can set you up for life for money. You just need to play a game.
Is this real or is it fictional?
Oh, it's fiction. Very okay. Fiction.
Because I could never figure out if it was supposed to be real or fiction.
No, it's fiction.
Okay.
Also, because I've had a little more time lately, watching some streaming stuff like Squid Game. Have not watched The Witcher yet, but I am getting caught up on other stuff that I've wanted to see.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Daughter's Boyfriend. We're going to watch that.
Okay.
So that. Now, I've been watching movies. Again, I hear a lot about these things, and I have this huge list on my phone where I'll catch a snapshot of what I want to watch. Like tonight, we're going to watch the Harry Potter reunion because it's streaming now on HBO Max. But my wife and I actually have been sitting down, and when we finally have a day off together, we catch a movie. The first one was Being the Ricardos. This is the one with Nicole Kidman and I can never say his name. Javier Bardem, starring as Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz.
Written by Aaron Sorkin.
Exactly.
My favorite writer when it comes to movies and TV.
For the most part, true. The only difference is the things that happen in it, they show it all happening in 1 week. It didn't happen in 1 week. It happened over years. But with that in mind, it was interesting. I mean, I love Lucille Ball, you know, especially since I realized her link to Star Trek. But it was so cool to be watching it because part of the fun is as we're watching it, we're like, hey, my God, there's Greg Clark, you know, from S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that fun thing. And then I can't think of the guy's name. He was on the Louis Dreyfus VP, played her.
In Veep.
Yeah, Veep. Why can't I think of his name?
And J. Jonah Jameson plays William Frawley.
He was there. Yeah, it was just I got to find that guy's name. It's driving me nuts. Vivian Vance? No, that's.
Okay. That was Ethel.
J.K. Simmons, yeah.
Yep.
Anthony Russell Hale.
Oh.
Yes, he's the one. And it was wonderful. I mean, knowing that for the most part it's true. There was one part that wasn't. I'm not going to talk about it because, again, this is still out and I don't want to be a spoiler guy. We did a twosome the other day. We watched Don't Look Up on Netflix, which is kind of a satirical science fiction film. One of those where, like you said, I probably don't want to watch it if you're in a bad mood. But this was a lot of fun. Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Lawrence, Meryl Streep. I mean, we're watching Meryl Streep. She just chews up everything in the movie. But this is kind of a real indictment of not only society, but probably how we'll probably end up going. You know, if it's going to be a world ending event, yeah, they're going to spin it in order to make it some type of, well, no, there is no comet. Yes, there is a comet. Don't look up. No, don't look down. So if you're having problems with today's political climate, you probably want to avoid this. If you want to face it head on and think about it, definitely see this one. I enjoyed the living heck out of it. And I was real curious how they were going to go to the ending with it. And I thought it ended up pretty good.
Now, Joe, do you have a Roku?
It's in the TV. But the TV also allows itself to connect to a lot of these things itself.
Right. So you have the Roku channel.
Probably.
On the Roku channel, there is a new 10-part series. And we're getting near an hour, so we'll close with this.
Well, I got one more movie to talk about.
Okay. But go ahead. There is a series on the Roku channel. If you don't have the Roku channel and you're a comic book fan, you may want to find it through nefarious means, called Slugfest. And it's based on the book Slugfest, which is a book that came out a few years ago about the 70-year war between Marvel and DC, which really wasn't about the war between Marvel and DC. But they did an adaptation of it with big-name actors. Each episode's about 10, 15 minutes long. There are 10 episodes, and it was one of those where it dropped on Christmas. And again, I said, oh, I'll watch an episode, I'll watch an episode a day or an episode every few days to stretch it out. No, I ended up watching it all in 2 days. It is about Marvel and DC. It starts with DC starting to print comics and then moves over to Marvel, creating Captain America. And the part of history that we kind of want to shove under the rug, but we can't when we talk comics, that boy, Hitler was really popular in the U.S. in 1940.
Yeah. I remember a book from the shop I used to go to growing up. He had just paperback, throwaway paperback. We can deal with Hitler.
Yeah. But Charles Lindbergh held this huge America First rally. Gosh, I haven't heard that phrase before.
Never.
About how, hey, Hitler's the right guy because he's fighting the commies. And the commies are trying to unionize this country. So we need to throw in our lot with Hitler. And it goes into when Captain America was created, most of the people working at Timely were Jewish. They were hearing from their family what was going on in Germany. So on the first issue of Captain America, there's Captain America punching Hitler in the face about a year before we entered World War II. And the American right wing calling up Timely Comics and threatening them. They don't go into the whole story where somebody actually got through to Kirby and said, you know, I'm down here in the lobby and you Jews are.
I love that story.
And Kirby just got up, put his cigar in his mouth and went downstairs to beat the tar out of the guy who had run off.
Yeah.
Because Kirby was in street gangs in the 1920s. He grew up in street gangs. They didn't have guns and drugs, but they did beat the crap out of people. Kirby had no problem beating the crap out of people. By the time he got back from World War II, he didn't need to anymore, but he was always ready to throw down. They also do Jeanette Kahn taking over DC and then the DC implosion. They go into the Marvel versus the Spider-Man versus Superman. They do the death of Superman, and they have big name actors. Ray Wise, who you probably know best from either Twin Peaks or West Side Story, plays Jack Kirby. I'm watching this going, this is so cool. But they intersperse it with interviews. So at times you get, here's Mark Evanier talking about it, and here's Ray Wise as Jack Kirby, acting. Here's here's an, I forget the actor who played Stan Lee, but they would have archival footage of Stan Lee being interviewed, and then they'd have the actor playing Stan Lee. Or, you know, and all through, all the way up to the, I think the Spider-Man Clone Saga was the last one they did. Each episode's 15 minutes. My only problem with it was, like most histories of comics, they jump from their beginning all the way up to the 60s, forgetting everything in between. They don't mention Martin Goodman once. Not once.
Yeah, that's something I always get mad at, especially when people are like, oh, Stan Lee was good. Jack Kirby was better. It's like, no, Stan wasn't in charge. He didn't own anything. Somebody was raving about, oh, Stan Lee sold his rights. No, Stan Lee had no rights. He didn't. It was his uncle.
Employee.
Yes. Why don't you get it through your heads? Stop changing the narrative. No. And the minute you hear somebody complaining about Stan Lee took all the credit, blah, 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 and they don't mention Martin Goodman, it's like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So I'm going to end on a more happy note, because the last thing we saw on Netflix, and we're glad we watched this after Don't Look Up, we watched Red Notice. It's pretty simple.
I hear that is fun.
Oh, it's a comedy action film. It's Dwayne Johnson being Dwayne Johnson, Ryan Reynolds being Ryan Reynolds, Gal Gadot being Gal Gadot, and how do we say it? Shenanigans ensue.
Yes.
I don't want to talk anything more about it other than see it, because it's one of those movies you can only see once. Because by the time you get to the end of it, you'll know what I mean. You go back and you watch it again. You can only see it once. It's like Shutter Island or watching, why can't I think of Orson Welles? Rosebud, his sled. If you know the ending of Citizen Kane, it's still good, but it would be more interesting if you didn't know it. Like Shutter Island, when you get to the end of it, you can go back and watch it again, but it's not the same. Red Notice is that way. It's a ton of fun. So check it out. It's on Netflix. I think, what is it? Ricardo is on Amazon. Red Notice, Don't Look Up on Netflix. Slugfest on Roku. Spider-Man in your theater. Boy, for all the movies we're talking about, we get no love from these guys.
And a new Boba Fett show.
Oh, I know. Disney I haven't
Plus,
even started
I haven't
that.
Seen yet.
Yeah, I want to get that going.
Now, here's the thing. You do all of these on your internet.
I do them on my TV. I want to see a big screen. I'm not big on watching on a computer.
But it is through your internet. It's not through your cable. And when you're on your internet, you need to be safe. And the way to be safe is with our sponsor.
Believe it or not, kids, this here podcast has sponsors. And that sponsor, since day one, is DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best bar none web host in the whole known universe. And if you need a website, head on over to dreamhost.com, put in code CRAZY, that's K-R-A-Y-Z, and get $20 off your first year. Now, if you would like to advertise here on any of the Solitaire Rose Network podcasts, you can just email me at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, subject advertising. Also, head on over to eBay and look for user Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, that's Joe Crazy Writer, who's always telling us about the eBay in every episode of Crazy Comics and Stories. If you would like to contact us, you can do so. You can give us a call at 952-856-0519. Leave a message and we'll play it on the show. Or you can send us an email at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com. Thanks.
See how I did that there?
I did. That was very clever.
Because somebody said, you know, you've been at this for 10 years. You should be really good at your transitions. And, you know, the thing is, I think I'm pretty good at transitions, but you can tell by listening to all these other podcasts I do.
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is currently on a pause, basically because COVID-19 has made it so that I have to work a lot of extra hours at both jobs. But you can still go and listen to my other podcasts. Now, you're probably listening to Crazy Comics and Stories, which is the main podcast. But on this same feed, KRAYZCOMIX, is Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo radio podcast that I do. I've done interviews, I've done short stories, I've done all sorts of things, and you can get to it right here on this same feed. I also do a podcast called Novelcast, where I take the novels I've written and turn them into free audiobooks. That's over at novels.solitairerose.com. Dangerous Dan Moore and I, and of course Wolfie B. Bad, give you bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. You send in your questions, and we give you the aforementioned bad advice. And then myself and Adam Vermillion from For the Love of Comics do the Fantastic Forecast at fantasticforecast.solitairerose.com, where we go through the issues of the Fantastic Four issues at a time to give the plot and commentary on each issue. That's not all. Yes, I'm crazy. I still, over at PWInsiderElite.com, every week on Wednesday, do a recap of the latest episode of AEW Dynamite. I write up what happened, and then myself and Anthony Pyrus will do an audio. Now, you can only listen to the audio if you're a member at PWInsiderElite.com, and if you're a wrestling fan, you should be, where we then break down the episode, talk about what we liked, what we didn't like, give it a grade, and let you know if you should have watched that episode. Those are the other podcasts here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network. Thanks. And now we get to the only part of the show Joe cares about. No, not dressing me up in a weasel suit like Bobby Heenan.
That could be fun.
No, it's Joe. What's going on the eBays?
We did watch Trading Places. I really want a gorilla suit. Anyways.
That is, you know, for all the people who talk about how Die Hard is a Christmas movie, it's not, for one reason and one reason alone. The plot has nothing to do with Christmas. It happens at Christmas, but it's the resolution doesn't involve Christmas. Nothing about it involves Christmas. Whereas Trading Places, Christmas is a huge part of that movie. Trading Places is more of a Christmas movie than Die Hard. I have spoken.
Well,
especially when you got Dan Aykroyd eating his beard.
Yeah.
He now we're all watching like beer.
And he looks like he enjoyed it. Well, I got a number of things I can talk about. I can list all the oodles of things I have sold on eBay, from Science in Your Future, Adventures in Science from General Electric, a little newsprint giveaway from 1956, to I don't know, a Detective's Comic 1000, the Care of Andrew's Third Eye Comics variant cover, which I sold and paid for all the other variant covers I have. I could tell you about all the high-end books I picked up over Black Friday that I've slowly been wading through and discovering, oh, I got this. So I put a lot of them on eBay, and people are giving deals on that as well. Or I could talk about the Wild Wild West number 5 from Gold Key, based off the TV show. Robert Conrad and Ross Martin, I believe, are in there. 1969, had a photo cover. It was actually in pretty good shape. Or I could talk about the complete Deathmate.
Ooh.
Which would you like, Mr. Strode?
Well, complete Deathmate, of course. Because of course. He's going to puke.
Puke. I haven't eaten. I had my stomach pumped, just like the Mad Magazine parody of Clockwork Orange. Before you beat him up, pump his stomach. Okay, Corey, work with me. How many colors of Deathmate do we know of?
Well, there were the main 5. Okay. Then the prologue, and wasn't there like an epilogue comic?
Yeah, they were kind of silver covered.
Prologue, yeah, but they weren't called a color.
No.
They were just prologue, epilogue.
Foil cardboard cover.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, the first appearance of Gen 13.
Was in red?
No, that was the black.
Okay.
Yeah. Because what came, I remember when they came out, the first ones that came out were, oh, I'm trying to get a picture of this. It was the yellow edition and the blue edition. And those came from Valiant. And I believe they came out pretty fast. And then the black one came out, and then the super late red one. And that one's a little more pricey sometimes because that was Rob Liefeld's one.
And that's the one that, that people could actually cut their orders on.
Yeah, we ended up returning them. I remember I kept 10 and ended up selling it because people were like, came in after summer was over and after the prologue is shipped. And people were like, where to go? I got to pick them up. So you got those, the main four. There are gold editions, which is basically the like the prologue in gold, the black edition in gold. Those are a little more pricey because those are kind of retailer incentives. Now, what are the other three colors that were part of this?
There was green. Yep. From Advanced Comics.
And also from the Comic Defense System.
Ah, because Comics.
You bought, well, it was both. Because Advanced Comics had the green. And then if you bought the Comic Defense System, and I don't know if it was the pages that you put in the three-ring binders or just one of their special covers, there was one. They're exactly the same. They actually have Solar Prophet going against, oh, what was her name? Hadrian, I think, the main bad villain in Unity. One says Advanced Comics on the logo. One says Comic Defense System. So you got the green version. There's two of those, not terribly expensive. You should be able to find it fairly easy. The other two were from previews.
And they were pink and orange.
You are correct. And they're a little more pricey, a little tougher to find. Again, they have their own story. I'm not sure. I see Grifter on the pink version. The orange one is tremendously hard to find. In its lowest price, it's $40. If you can find, I think there's one or two on eBay. And then guys have had them slabbed and they want $600 for them. I don't know. So that is the tough one. And these are all Ashcan editions that came with Diamond. I remember people complaining about them, especially like, well, we can only get the Advanced Comics because we were Cap City Town. What about the previews edition? Again, there was no eBay, no interwebs to find this stuff. And then there is an odd anomaly. There's a giveaway, which apparently I think the boys used when they went touring. It's just a cardboard cover. No pages inside, no silver foil. And every time I see them, they're autographed. Not to be confused with the Deathmate Tour Edition, which essentially was a silver-covered book with kind of a silver foil edition across it. And it just contains artwork and from Deathmate and the bios of the creators. This includes Bob Layton, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Mark Moretti, Mark Silvestri, and Joe Quesada. And this was given out, obviously, when they were out on tour. And you can find them autographed. You can find them unautographed. All depends on what you do. So just don't stop at the main four with the prologue and epilogue. You got the greens, you got the pinks, you got the orange. And then,
although pink and orange were the same story.
Yeah. So.
So you don't need to buy both pink and orange. You can buy either pink or orange.
Yeah. And pink's easier to find than orange, although they're both tough to find because it's just weird that there were so many orange or greens that seemed to be more prevalent than the other ones. I do recall getting them in handfuls from Cap City because I believe they not only give away one for every Advanced Comics you sold, but also you just had them there. I believe I gave them away to people. If you bought any of them, you could have a free prologue. And we sold a lot of them. Oh, well. Corey, do you happen to have $279,999.99?
Not on me.
Oh, well, if you could rustle it up, you could go to eBay and get Amazing Spider-Man 150 through 187, Volume 2, 1 through 58, all CGC'd 9.8.
Wow.
Yeah, this guy's got this collection. I've just put it on there. I mean, he's asking like $2,000 shipping because, I mean, this is heavy stuff for all these. But to have that many collected in one edition, including, you know, First Carnage, First Venom, First Black Spidey, just amazing. So just if you go Amazing Spider-Man, CGC, and just start with highest, you'll see it there. It's just kind of fun. You can make an offer if you want. You know, speaking of making an offer, I almost wanted to see, Corey, if you wanted to pool some money together, because guys got this deal where for $3,000, let me see if I can find it. I got all this stuff I'm watching. And we'll talk about it a little bit later when we get to Geeky too. But he's selling 20,000 graphic novels, including omnibuses. Here it
Holy
is.
Crap.
Graphic novel bulk palette, DC Marvel Dark Horse Image. He lists everything for $3,680.11 with free flat shipping rate. And it's like an instant graphic novel collection. He lists everything he's got. Absolute Carnage, A-Force, Amazing Spider-Man, Annihilation, the complete collection. A lot of stuff out of print. A lot of, I mean, I'm just looking at this like, damn, I might want to buy this just for myself. But there's all sorts of fun stuff on eBay, including mine. Like I said, I've been listing stuff like crazy. I'm almost through my box of variants that I picked up on Black Friday. I've got a number of other things, some signed books, some unsigned books. I'll talk a little bit more when we get to geeking of some of the fun things I kept. But you know what to do. If you see something you're interested in, either watch it, and more than likely I'll send you an offer, or just send me an email. Say, hey, I listen to this here podcast. I'm interested in getting this, and I will probably cut you a deal that I wouldn't cut just anybody.
So it's not like the State Farm ads that if you watch any sports at all, I think State Farm just buys all the ad time during all the sports.
Yeah.
It's not just a special deal for one person. Wait, no. It's not a special deal for everybody. You have to be in the club of fans of this show.
Yes.
Good.
So, anyways. K-R-A-Y-Z. Come get some.
And now we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not where I create my own dojo because I like Cobra Kai so much, and I call it Comic Kai.
Comic Kai.
No, it's Freaking a Geeky Joe. What are you freaking on?
I read the graphic novel Trouble. This is the Marvel comic under the Epic line, where Marvel was experimenting with teen romance. It was released under the Epic imprint. Mark Miller wrote it. Terry Dodson drew it. It reads okay. It's drawn very nice. It's got some of the comics have this. The hardcover has the one where the two young women in bikini tops are on it. And essentially, it's I'll just read this off Atomic Avenue. Teenage brothers Richie and Ben Parker decide to work at a vacation resort in the Hamptons during the summer. There they meet freewheeling slut May and her friend Mary and fall in lust. The shock value of seeing Ben and Mary in bed repelled critics and longtime fans, but it achieved massive publicity from mainstream media. Obviously not a lot, because you can find this book for maybe $5 on eBay's. Not tremendously expensive anywhere else. I read this. I got to tell you, Mark Miller, you don't know shit about teenagers. Just, first of all, they're not teenagers. They're 18-ers where they're off pre-college, because obviously you can't show what really happens to teenagers. Yeah, they have messy group, pretty... first time ever, am I doing it right? All crap sex with teen pregnancy.
And you can't have I don't think anybody could do a story about teenagers under 18 having sex without people losing their minds calling it child porn.
Yeah. So you fake it out, you call it they're 18 plus. I guess this is canon for the Ultimate Universe. This is the origin of Peter Parker in the Ultimate Universe. He's dead, so it's okay. But I was disappointed because I really thought this would be kind of a fun thing where, like, oh, this is how they meet and they get together, and, you know, I'll have no problem putting it in my headcanon. No, this is, yeah, really, May's just, I'll sleep with anybody, and she gets pregnant and sleeps with Ben, and then Ben's like, oh, by the way, I'm sterile. And it's like, oh.
Well, and the other thing was, this was going to be the Peter Parker, how Peter Parker was created, to kind of change the continuity so that Aunt May was really his mother.
And it failed. Well, for us.
Well, and then Marvel kind of got cold feet, thank goodness, and pulled all references to it being anything related with Spider-Man, even in the Ultimate Universe, and just kind of dropped it out there.
Yeah.
And they kind of said, well, this is, we're attempting to do a romance comic, when really it was, they've got two highly paid creators who had put together this story that was going to be tied in with Spider-Man. They got cold feet. It's not like they're going to, well, we're just going to pay them and not make any money on it. If we put it out, maybe we'll make our money back.
And the problem was, is that it was very much set in today's world.
Yeah.
Which, again, you know, when we first see Aunt May and Ben, you would have had to make this more of a timepiece. Again, taking away from Spider-Man, I just don't think you guys get teenagers. I don't even want to show this to my daughters because they'll probably just get offended by it. But of note, like I said, other than the photographic covers, you can find the variant, the number one with the girlies on it that Mark Miller signed. The second print has a little heat on it because it was drawn by Frank Cho of number one. But after that, there was no, everything we had the photo covers. And I think, I might have already gotten rid of my copy. It's around here somewhere. I thought my copy had the girls on it, but maybe the book, some guy's asking like $20. It's like $5. You can find it for $5 if you really want to go down that road. It's not that great a book. For 2021, my goal is to not save memes. I have over 6,500 memes between my phone and my computer. Just things that are funny. Could be political. Could be, like, I got one where, you know, Betty White's from her Match Game days holding a card that says boobs. Which is, I had a lot of fun with putting it on people's feed yesterday. But it's like, oh my God, I'm going to get rid of some of these. Oh, 6,000 of them. I got to throttle back. Take it calm. I was a little bummed. I'm very bummed about hearing, you know, Betty White passing away. Not so much, just because it would have been cool if she made it to 100. I was bummed about Andrew Voss passing away.
Andrew Fischoss.
Thank you. I can't read my own writing. And Corey, tell him about it because my computer froze up again. I don't have my notes on him.
Andrew Fischoss, most comic fans know him from doing some Batman stories, including Batman Ultimate Evil. He was, well, first off, one of my favorite writers ever. He worked in comics as well as novels. But he started as a prosecutor and then moved to a lawyer who would work in child protection. And his whole career was around saving children who've been abused. And his novels are really hard-boiled crime novels dealing with that as well. They are not easy reads, but they are great novels. He was in his 70s when he passed. He also did a series over at Dark Horse called Hard Looks, which were adaptations of his short stories. He did a Predator miniseries as well.
Cold War, I think.
Yep.
Which tied into Cross.
Yeah. And he did Cross, which was a character he created that was in novels and in comics. Just a fantastic writer. He wrapped up his Burke series. Burke was a criminal who had an extensive underground network. And the first few novels have a lot of really fantastic elements in them. Thankfully, he toned all that down and made them much more realistic as it went on. But fantastic, fantastic writer. Loved his stuff. He is actually on my list of freakings as well. If you're looking for a good novel to start with, I would start with the novel The Getaway Man. It's not connected to any of his other stuff. It's a standalone novel. Fantastic stuff. He did the comic Batman Ultimate Evil and then wrote a novel of it as well. Delving into Batman's childhood. Just fantastic writer. It's a great loss. Just a great loss. With Betty White, I do want to point out something, and it ties into something that Joe and I say all the time. Betty White got to hear from people how much they loved her. We've spent the last 10, 15, 20 years with how much we love Betty White. Anytime, she got Saturday Night Live because people wanted her to host Saturday Night Live, winning Golden Globe.
Oh, we watched that yesterday, too.
Constant work. But when people met her, they just talked about how much they loved her while she was alive, which is why Joe and I talk about when you go to a convention to, if you're going to do the celebrity thing, go ahead. But go to the comic creators who've meant a lot to you and just thank them. Tell them how much you love their work. I do that on Twitter and Facebook with older creators, with current creators. When I, with EC, you realize only one person from EC is still with us, and that's Angelo Torres. When it comes to Marvel in the 60s, very few people are still with us. Roy Thomas is still with us in his early 80s. Sal Buscema is still with us in his 90s. I think it's great that finally people have started telling Sal Buscema how much they loved his work. Roy Thomas is really, since he moved out of writing comics and doing Alter Ego, we've spent a lot of time telling him how much we love his work and to please share his life story while he's still with us. I think it's wonderful in a way that Betty White got to hear how much we loved her while she was still alive, rather than all of us talking about it after she passed. Joe, go back to your freaking.
Well, speaking of celebrities that passed, when Michael Nesmith passed away from the Monkees, that hit me really hard. Possibly because I had just seen him in concert live a few weeks earlier, about 3 weeks earlier. But he passed away on December 10th, 2021. Another celebrity who, towards the end, realized just how much he was beloved. Mickey Dolenz talks about how when they went out on tour, they were going on tour, and then they had to postpone because Michael Nesmith had heart problems, had a bypass. And then as they started to go again, they were worried about COVID, but they just did it. They talk about Mickey talks about how much Mike actually drew off the audience and got stronger. But people talk about, he looked frail. He would sit down. But he absolutely loved performing. He was like, we are going to do this. He had plans to go do a celebrity cruise. He was not going to quit. Unfortunately, his body had different ideas on it. We've talked about Michael Nesmith in the past before because I picked up his book Infinite Tuesday, which was kind of an autobiographical rift. And what a lot of people don't realize is just how much you probably have been influenced by Michael Nesmith, but you just don't know it. I'm trying to find my notes here, but he was responsible for pretty much the first music video out there. Generally, when you did a music video, you just got on stage and you just lip-synced along with your song. Go look up Real, R-I-O. In the United States, there was, and we're talking, this is in the 70s now, there was no real outlet for music videos. There was no reason to do it. If you did it, you went on American Bandstand and you kind of lip-synced. Overseas, you did the same thing. Michael Nesmith didn't do that. He made a video and it just blew everybody away. And he was kind of, you could almost call him like, what do we call pre-Golden Age comics? Platinum comics. This was kind of like the Platinum,
yeah, the Platinum era.
Yeah, for the same thing. So he, excuse me, he kind of pioneered that. He also did a show called Pop Clips, which ultimately became MTV. Rather than stick with it, he sold the concept to Warner Brothers. That was one of his successes. He became a producer of music videos, including people like Lionel Richie. He had a primetime television series, which I remember seeing bits of, called Television Parts in 85. Hilarious. He was the first person to put a barcode on a record because he was interested in how people got paid in doing inventory. He felt if all records had barcodes on them, you could easily scan out and in the SKU numbers. Very contemporary, but this is stuff he was thinking about in the 70s. He gets criticized a little bit for not being around when the Monkees reformed in 86 to tour, but he was also very busy with his production company. He had a lot of people depending on him. He could not step away to do it. So again, I grew up watching the Monkees. This was, as you know, again, born in 65. I watched the Monkees afternoon reruns and I just found it hilarious. Between that and Monty Python, that's pretty much all you need to know about my humor. Just fast non sequiturs references. If you get them, you're great. If not, it's your fault. The Monkees were hilarious. I mean, Davey got the chicks. Peter was sweet. I knew I was more like Mickey, but everybody wanted to be Mike. So you got the hat, you were cool, you got to drive the car. I mean, to me, that's the top car. If I give me you want to buy me a car for Christmas, the Monkey Mobile is all I want. Better than any Batmobile, in my opinion. So I love the Monkees. I saw them in concert at the State Fair when it was Peter, Davey, and Mickey. And then I'm happy I got to see Mike in concert when him and Mickey were touring. So I did see them all in concert, not together, but there's footage out there. You can go look at it on the YouTubes. So just amazing. And it hit me hard. But I'm happy to hear, especially when Mickey finally got his thoughts together, that, like you said, Corey, Nez, as he was always called, he was beginning to understand how well he was beloved, how much people loved him. He drew energy off doing the concerts, which is why, even though he was very frail and we didn't realize how I don't want to really dwell too much on it, but, you know, he had a heart surgery, but he just wanted to get out there and keep touring. Even at the concert we went to, he sang one of his songs and he had almost the audience in tears just because he told how much it meant for him to be out there, and he was dedicating his song. If I ever got a chance to see him, I don't know what I'd say. One of my friends who used to shop at my store put up, he had one of those deals where you could call in. His wife got it for him. You call in and talk to him. It was supposed to be like a 5-minute conversation, ended up being a 15-minute conversation. And I may have to go back and watch it because I wanted to watch it, but it was too hard. Just, you know, the only other person who hit me hard when he passed away was Chaz Boseman. And I got a quick question for you, Corey. There is a partition that's starting to surface to recast Black Panther and not just leave it off to the side as a tribute to Chaz Boseman. When Chaz first passed away, I would have agreed. Now that time has been, you know, a little time between the shock and now, and the fact that people that know Boseman, they're saying he wouldn't have wanted Black Panther to be shelved just because he passed away. I'm thinking maybe they should, maybe not recast him, but you could have him come at Black Panther Return. Maybe later on in a movie, because we know the lore of the Black Panther in the comics. Black Panther isn't a single individual. He's someone who's existed through time. With that idea to save, I can't even say the name, Chahala, how do you feel about it? Do you think they should bring back Black Panther, or do you think they should just let it rest?
I think that they should do what is in the mythology. The actress who played his sister in the comics took over as Black Panther. when he was, you know, off doing the cosmic Black Panther stuff. I think that would work. I think having someone else take the mantle would work. I think that it is too important a property, not in a, oh, we got to make money off it, but it means something to so many people.
Oh, absolutely.
That you follow the mythology. And I'm just throwing this out there as kind of a fantasy booking. How cool would it be if Killmonger has reformed, you know, oh, he's dead, big deal, it's comics. If Killmonger has reformed and takes his place as Black Panther, doing that redemptive storyline with him. Because out of all the Marvel villains, he was the one who you could really look at his circumstances and say, if just one or two things was different, he would have been a hero. That's my thought on it. Marvel will do what Marvel will do.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the problems that they have in that the movies have been so successful for so long. The actors, you know, Tony Stark by Robert Downey Jr., Robert Downey Jr. has pretty much aged out of the part. He's almost 60 now. Dude, even with all the special effects and everything, I don't want to see a 60-year-old Iron Man. You know, Chris Evans is in his 40s. It's harder and harder to maintain a body like that as you get older. Hugh Jackman said the reason he doesn't want to be Wolverine anymore isn't because he doesn't like the part. It's that it's so hard for him to get that body that it's physically impossible for him to do the part anymore. We as fans kind of need to get ready for the James Bond effect, whereas somebody else is going to step into that role. And Marvel will decide if it's the mantle gets passed on, or if, well, in this movie, Thor is no longer going to be played by Chris Hemsworth. It's going to be played by much younger actor X. And maybe they do kind of a little aside. I always liked in Her Majesty's Secret Service, which is one of my favorite Bond movies. I'm weird, I know, but it's very close to the novel, and they got rid of a lot of the snarkiness that was starting to sneak in and then took over in the 70s. When George Lazenby's Bond messes up, he kind of turns to the camera and says, this never happened to the other guy. They didn't dwell on it. They didn't take a whole lot of time on it. They just acknowledge and move on. Give it a joke, move on. Now we have this kind of hidden mythology in our heads that James Bond 007 is a title that passes from person to person to person to person.
Or he's a Time Lord. I like that one. I have a question. Oh, go ahead.
But that's my feeling on it.
Okay. I heard in the podcast, and I do listen to them occasionally. I listen to the Festivus one. But I heard that IDW is losing the Transformer license.
Yes.
Did they lose G.I. Joe as well?
Yes.
Wow, they lose all of Hasbro.
We don't know if they've lost all of Hasbro, but they're losing those two as of yesterday.
Okay. I have a question.
This is just a rumor. There's not been a press release. It hasn't been announced. The rumor is that Kirkman from Image is the guy who has sewn up the license from now on.
Interesting. I'll have to pay attention to that. I will tell
people. Heaven knows he's got enough money.
I will tell people, though, this is the time. If you are so inclined, I don't think it's going to happen to the comics, but definitely the graphic novels. You want to see some weird prices? Go look at Titans graphic novels on eBay. They're expensive, silly money, and most of them are just reprinting the stuff from Marvel. So this might be the time to start picking up IDW graphic novels before they go out of print. And as we've talked about in the past, especially in terms of licensing books, these are the ones that are usually the tough ones because they just can't reprint them. So who knows? Maybe Kirkman might do that thing we've always talked about and do a quick ROM omnibus for to benefit Bill Mantlo. That would be nice. Reprint the Marvel stuff that up until now is unreprintable. So that's neither a freaking nor geeking. That's just something I heard in passing, as well as Dark Horse Comics being sold, which could be good, especially since Dark Horse doesn't seem to have enough money to exploit all the properties they own. And people are like, they own property? Go, oh, yeah, they own quite a bit. But that's freaking on for me. How about you, Corey? What are you freaking on?
We've covered a lot of the stuff I'm freaking on. There's just one thing. At the end of the year, I went through my DCBS stuff to see, you know, what's late. I can't tell you how many DC omnibuses were canceled and resolicited or canceled and haven't been resolicited. Marvel only did it once when they switched distributors. But DC, I swear, every omnibus that is a Batman, I've had to order at least twice. And in some cases, three times. Because they solicit it. Oh, it's not coming out. Resolicit. Oh, it's not coming out. Resolicit. And Bad Idea goes out. Bad Idea Publishing, which is a terrible publisher, is going out with a bang. They are soliciting an invisible comic that you can only get CGC'd. And what it is, they have a transparent acetate cover with staples on it that they are putting in the CGC 9.8 and auctioning those off. Everything about Bad Idea has been terrible. Their whole, you can only buy this book at certain times. From what I've heard from retailers, they are a nightmare to deal with because they have all these hoops that you have to jump through. And they're basically just trying to generate collectibles. Nobody gives a shit about what's in any of the books because I have yet to read a review of one of their books anywhere. That means that they're not sending them out to be reviewed. Why? Because they don't give a shit if you read it or not. It's a collectible.
And they look good. The source has a full set of almost all the books. They look good, but it's kind of like, I have no idea where you're going with this. Is this a regular series, a mini series? Do they tie in? Is this a shared universe?
And I'm now they're shutting drop, down at the
yeah,
end
I'm not
going
to drop $5 to find out. So,
and I don't want to have to jump through all the hoops. Wasn't there, like the first, I saw that display at the source, and I was going to pick some up just to see, kind of like with TKO. I don't like TKO's distribution, but I'm gonna. I picked up some of their books when we were up at when we were in St. Cloud. They didn't have any number ones, and I asked about the number ones, and they said, "Oh, the number ones you had to or, you had to be here on a specific day, and we could only sell them on that day. And any of the number ones we didn't sell, we had to send back." And then the rest of these are unsellable because if I can't get the first part of the story, who cares? I don't collect. I read. And if you make it hard for me to read, I'm not going to read it. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Oh, I got all sorts of things. I actually started reading some graphic novels, if you can believe that.
Well, we're already at an hour. We're already at an hour 35.
That's so okay.
If you could keep it to about 5 minutes.
It's not going to happen because, remember, this has been three friggin' weeks. You got to play on Festivus. I didn't even bring that up as a freaking. I got so much to talk to you people about. But, again, I don't spend hours dissecting books. I just say I liked it or I don't like it. For example, I picked up my first Epic Collection I read through, Marvel 2-in-1 Presents The Thing. And this has, let's see, we start at Marvel Feature 11 and 12, Marvel 2-in-1 1-19, and then Marvel Team Up 47. And half of the fun is just reading this. It's just kind of, you know, it's a hot mess. I mean, this is 70s Marvel. The creators change, the editors change, the art changes. You know, but again, as a collector, I was just like, oh, who's on it this month? Oh, Thing and Thor, I got to pick it up. you know, when Steve Gerber was writing it, he was doing that thing with Wundar. And then, of course, when he wasn't writing it, it kind of disappeared. Just fun stuff. And for 2021, I'm going to have a thing where I will be slowly filling in Epic collections. So as we do the previews, it'll be, what's the Epic collection I'm buying this month? Or maybe I won't buy it through previews because a lot of the better stores have them. Another one I read, Godzilla, A Natural Disasters. This is a reprint of three Godzilla Legends, Godzilla in Hell, and Godzilla Rage Across Time. Kind of a mixed bag. Godzilla Legends was interesting because it basically is dealing with the different monsters in his pantheon, and sometimes Godzilla's there, sometimes he isn't. And, of course, they have the scariest one, although the movie's not scary, but the thought concept is Hydra, as we call him, the smog monster. In Hell, what was the book? We just interviewed a book from Image where I said I'm waiting for the graphic novel. In Hell is basically Godzilla going through Dante's Hell. Most of it's got no words in it. I'm getting to the point, like, if you got a comic with no words, you're really missing out the idea of comics, because you need both to make it work. Otherwise, I'm just going to read it and be done in like 4 or 5 minutes. It's kind of like when Bone was reaching its conclusion and you pick up and here's just a 16 pages of Bone running from the big tiger cat or whatever. And you're like, that's it. Even some pages of Cerebus were like that. But when you read it in a graphic novel, it was better. This one, Rage Across Time was interesting because they take the idea that, yes, Godzilla has been around forever and how he's affected various things, such as Hannibal crossing the Alps, other things like that. That was a lot of fun. I am reading now. I finally started reading all of the Marvels by Douglas Walk, which is a journey to the ends of the biggest story ever told. Already not liking it as much because I thought he was going to do this chronologically, but he's kind of popping away. But let's ask Corey a question. This is kind of a sixth degree of Kevin Bacon. Does the Strode know? The protagonist of Amazing Spider-Man is basically that, a character who's met everybody. Who is the only significant Marvel character who's been on Earth the same time as Spider-Man, yet has not encountered him face-to-face? And it's not a superhero.
Is that Rick Jones?
No.
No.
It's actually Millie the Model.
She had
1,007 issues, and for some reason, Spider-Man's ex, Mary Jane Watson, was worked with Millie. So
in the comic called Models.
Yep. So anyways, it'll be a fun book. We'll see where we get. I'm sure I'll talk about it a little bit more. I am online now. I am playing Simpsons Tapped Out. I was able to get on Tapped Out, which is really fun. I'm glad I'm back on. I'm in the middle of their thing. I don't think I'll finish it like their Christmas special. I don't often geek about comics in the future, but however, from IDW, Godzilla versus the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Oh, I am so on that. I've been sending this to everybody I know that's a Power Ranger geek, and they're all excited about it. So, and again, if you're someone who wants to buy a weird crossover of licensed property that will probably go up in value, this would be the one to get, that and the book, because I don't know how often IDW will be allowed to go back to the well on this one. There's a new store in Rochester, Minnesota. Corey, we're going to have to road trip down there one of these days. It is called the Midwest Vintage Toys. They've been all over Facebook. You know, we're buying vintage toys. Send us your vintage toys. Well, now they have a store in Rochester. 2nd Avenue Northeast, Rochester, Minnesota, 55906. Says they're open noon to 8 daily, and I am geeking to get down there to see it. In case you're wondering why I haven't been reading a lot of books, it's because I found whatculture.com, and in there they got trekculture.com, which is kind of like, I just love lists, and, you know, they're like top 10 things in Star Trek that should have changed the universe but didn't, and I can just sit back and for 10, 15 minutes be entertained like that. They got it for Star Wars. I got it for Harry Potter. Yeah, it's always tough because depending on my mood, I'm going to sit there and I'm going to try reading a book, or I'm going to just sit and fall down the YouTube vortex. Lest you think I sit around and just tell you to come buy things, yes, I've been a busy boy buying stuff on the eBays. So I look carefully about to make sure my beloved wife isn't there because she doesn't know. I picked up a set of the Monkees 8-inch retro style action figures. These are kind of Mego size. They're not as well put together as Mego. The faces are like, but I got the, I want the Monkey Men, but they're really hard to find. I settled for a decent price set of them when they're wearing their red outfits with the buttons going down. Speaking of signed books, I've been picking up signed books. I think I talked about the Powder Toastman special last time where it was signed by Gary Owens. I had one, sold it, wish I didn't. Found one. I also found a signed Mankind number one from the Reign of Chaos. This was back in 1999. So this was in the Attitude era where it was signed. He only signed 500 copies by Mankind and Mick Foley and Sacco. So take that for what it's worth. I picked up the Undertaker one, which I was really happy to find. Again, he did 1,500 copies of this that the Undertaker signed. I will probably never find the third one, Stone Cold Steve Austin, because a lot of those have been slabbed. And I think he only signed like 50 of them. So definitely harder to find. Other signed books I picked up. As soon as I heard Andre Voss passed away, I realized I didn't have a signed one of him. I found a copy of Hard Looks 9. Anne Rice passed away. I was able to find a signed edition from IDW. I don't know why more people don't do this. It's a special cover, or maybe just the original cover of Anne Rice's Servant of the Bones. But this is the, it says right on the cover, signed edition, it's got her autograph. There's no certificate of authenticity. It's just, this is how it is. And IDW had a great idea. I don't know why other comic companies don't do that. They let Dynamic Forces do it, and they do a fun job of it. Let's see. Other goofy crap I've bought. I picked up Guar Orgasmageddon just because it was a funny-looking cover. I picked up a graphic novel. Somebody mentioned this. I don't know if you've read this one, Corey. It's called The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage, the mostly true story of the first computer by Sidney Padua. And I got it cheap. So I'm like, yeah, for $5 off of the eBays, yeah. So I'll be reading that, and we'll see if it was worth the $5. Hell, anything's worth the $5. So, yeah, that's me geeking. 7 minutes. Okay, Corey, your turn. What are you geeking on?
All right. I am finally, now that it's done, reading The Immortal Hulk. It was one of those that I'd read the first couple issues and then fell behind on. And when they announced that it would be a complete story ending with issue 50, it's like, okay, I'll wait till it's done. Well, it's done, and I'm reading it, and it's fantastic. And the thing that I love the most about the early issues is they're connected, but they're self-contained. Each one is a complete story. It's not read this and it flows into this and it flows into this and it flows into this and you can't read each issue individually. There are also one-shots that are connected to the story but aren't necessary to the story. And a lot of people complain a lot about Marvel starting over with new number ones. But Immortal Hulk is why it works. Because new creator comes on, they have a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And more creators are, when they come onto a book, that's how they pitch it to Marvel. I'm going to be doing this story. It starts here, boom, boom, boom. Internal workings are they have a plan where, well, if it doesn't sell and we have to end it by issue 12, this will be the end of the story. If it does sell, if it sells a little better, but we only get a 6-month extension, it goes 18 and so on and so on and so on. But I like the fact that when a creator comes on a book, it's not, I'm going to do an endless soap opera and just throw in whatever comes into my head. That was fun in the 70s when comics were pocket change. But now a comic is $4 and a trade paperback that's part of a story is $20. So it's better that, okay, this is a novel I'm writing and it will come out in chapters. And Immortal Hulk, scary as hell too. I like the fact that Hulk, when you read that first issue, it's very much, and I'm talking the original back in the 60s, it's very much coming out of Marvel's horror line. Al Ewing, when he came on, he's telling a horror story with the Hulk in it. The Spider-Man Beyond, it's a beginning, middle, and end. And I guess when the story ends, they're going to start over with a new number one and a new creative team. There are a lot of rumors out there about who it could be. And if some of them are true, I'm really excited. The other comic that I am working my way through is the... I'm still reading the Savage Sword of Conan's. Because it's... 70s comics take longer to read. Because they're so much more dense when it comes to verbiage. But because Roy Thomas is adapting novels, I don't mind that they're a bit overwritten and the prose is a little purple, especially with that beautiful John Buscema art. It just seems to kind of fit with Conan. Speaking of Conan, the series Savage Avengers is ending. That is another book. And when it started, it was like, ugh, a Conan Avengers book. Who cares? But it's another book that has a beginning, middle, and end. And it's very much a single story. And it's so much better than I thought it would be. Because the story is that it's one of Conan's old foes in the modern era, Kulan Goth. And Conan has kind of been pulled into the modern Marvel universe, but Kulan Goth has become so much more powerful over the years that first it affects over here and then over here, and then it slowly gathers together. And it's coming to its ending, and the ending, we had the final fight, and then there's another issue that tells the consequences for that final fight. Again, complete story. You could tell when it was pitched. This is what the creators wanted to do. TV-wise, I talked about Slugfest. Go out of your way to see it. Even though it's kind of incomplete and hops around a lot, our comics history is being turned into TV shows. The stuff that we liked as kids, the behind-the-scenes stuff, the story behind the death of Superman gets an entire episode. With Louise Simonson and Mike Carlin and other people who were there at the time telling what happened, and then it's acted out by big-name actors. I'm sorry, I'm still enough of the kid who comics are garbage to be amazed that they're doing this, or that comics are in libraries, or comics are hardcovers. I'm still, you know, comics were throwaway garbage that, you know, people didn't care about. And even a lot of the creators in the 60s and 70s were like, I'm just churning out pages, man. Nobody's going to care about this in 6 months. Well, no, it's kind of gotten bigger. And the last thing I am geeking on is that this is New Year's weekend. I have the whole weekend off. My kitchen is almost cleaned. Almost. And you know what that means, Joe, when I clean my kitchen?
You're going to mess it up again.
No, I can't be my friend anymore. Believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books until my voice is cracking. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most, Joe.
Rather than a dad joke, and believe me, I got plenty. I thought we could start this new year by talking a little bit about what you're most proud of in 2021. And I'll go first. I am very proud I was able to get my daughter out to grad school because she had this deal where, like, she didn't know how they were going to get stuff out there. Were they pod it? Would they send things over? How were they going to do it? And I said, you know what? Let's rent a van and I will drive it over. And yes, shenanigans ensued. I'm pretty sure we did a podcast on it. But I was proud to have done that. It was a lot of fun. I saw parts of the country most people never will see. If anything, my wife and I would love to redo the route without a rental truck, without car breaking down. Oh, by the way, Dana's car, the bumper fell off. Don't worry about it. She got rid of it. She's got a new car. She's quite happy with it.
She saved the bumper, though, right?
I don't know what she did. Probably not. They have a small place, so they don't have room to put it. I will say, though, they do remind me, they think I was nuts because here we are, you know, it's nighttime, 70 miles an hour in a fully loaded rental van with everything she owns in her life, screaming down I-80. Now, if you've ever gone I-80 in the Salt Lake City, you know, it goes left and goes right and goes left and goes right and goes left and goes right for about 5 miles and probably a 2,000-foot drop. And they were right behind me wondering what in flaming blue hootie I was doing. But we made it. But I really nerved them because we had to spend an extra day in Salt Lake City. But that's what I'm most proud of in 2021. Corey, what are you most proud of?
I am actually most proud of the fact that my work on PW Insider has made me an actual journalist that is respected in the field. And like most things, when I was told that, I blew it off. You know, I'm just some goober who writes up what's on the show. But I've been interviewed by college professors. And my mind can't wrap itself around that, Joe. That the stuff I do is actually respected and important and people think I'm good at it. And I don't think I ever will let my mind completely wrap myself around it because I don't want to be one of those people who, well, I'm great. I'm so great at this.
Because, you know, you got me and Steph to keep you humble.
Well, and not only that, I've been friends with people who have that ego. And you look at their stuff over time, and because they get that in their head that I'm so much better than everybody else in my field. Their work falls apart quickly once they get that in their head. I never want to get that in my head. I always want to feel like that, you know, I'm just some goober trying to do the best I can. Kind of like with this podcast.
Speaking of which,
I've been doing this for 12 years, and I still think of myself as some goober trying to do the best I can.
I have a guest here.
Really?
My long-suffering wife. What are you most proud of in 2021?
That I didn't put you and all your stuff out on the front curb with a sign that says free to any home.
I think at this point, Corey, time to hit my music.
Done, bitches!